frosting. They got the flag. I like that. He works for Santa. So, knock it off. Be good. You were a little chunky, just like him. But you were cute. So freaking cute. My God. The electric bell. Your father would kill me. I'm being nitpicky, but I can see the net. And I don't like that, so. It's unfortunate because everybody's all dressed up and this one's unfinished, so it's awful. High five.
She can party. That's a party girl.
It's real snow. Look at it. It's a winter squall. Oh, it's off. Oh, it's bubbles. That was soap. Not okay. Not okay.
Good morning, sweet world, and welcome to the No Dunks podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Wednesday, December 20th, 2023. Happy Survivor Finale Day Woo! To all who celebrate. I'm J.E. Skeets here in the Classic Factory, and alongside me, as always, Tass Mellis.
Podcast listeners, this is for you.
Next to him, it's the bearded one, my top shot hot boy, Trey Kirby.
Heyo!
Heyo! And over yonder, the man making the magic happen, super producer, J.D.
Tass, you moved on, man. It really threw me off.
What? My head towards the ceiling?
No, it's your position.
Oh, I did move slightly to the left. Yes, yeah. Let me feel this pull. Yeah, you're right. Sorry about that.
Anyway, hello.
Let me feel this pull.
Shout out to the stream team joining us live. If you couldn't tell, we're live here on YouTube. Smash that like button. Make sure you subscribe on our way to 100,000 subs. And hello to the podcast listeners as well. Leave your boys a 5-star rating and review. That's all we ask. For Christmas this year, a 5-star rating and review.
And real snow, not soap bubbles. I think that's why I was off. Down here in the South, when we think about snow, we often just go get snow bubbles. Have you ever been somewhere down here? Down here, we don't get any snow. If you want to go to an event, they blow out soap bubbles instead of actually having snow.
It looks cool.
It looks great.
It looked real. It looked like a squall.
It does look so good.
You're going to get some real snow, hopefully, knock on wood. Yeah. You're heading home to the Great White North here soon.
Yeah, it's actually warm up there. It's not happening.
Global warming.
Trey going to Illinois. Maybe it's
looks
happening.
Looks like we got a couple of little flurries in the forecast here. Go. I'd love to see, even on Monday, to see a flake on Christmas. Come on. Fingies crossed.
Can you bring me some back?
I'll bring you one flake. One big flake.
I ain't going anywhere. All right. Also, later today on this show, we're going to hit the beach. So no snow there. We'll be answering your questions that you guys tweeted in and emailed in and even left on YouTube. But, wow, what a TNT doubleheader last night. They knocked this one out of the park. These were incredible games. We start with Ja Morant hitting a buzzer beater to lift his Grizzlies in his first game back after the 25-game suspension. He just took over, and he ended it at the buzzer. What a shot in traffic on one of the best perimeter defenders in the league in Herb Jones. I know Dyson Daniels was shading over as well. What a game. What a storybook, I was going to say ending, but return for Ja.
Yeah, when they talked about it pregame, the week leading up to it, head coach Taylor Jenkins was asked, is he starting? He said, yeah, this guy practices so hard, he is ready. But he didn't look incredible in the first half, even though he went hard to the rim in his couple stints in the first and second quarter. But the Pels were rolling. That run where C.J. McCollum was the guy making Ja Morant dance. He actually dribbled left, right on Ja Morant in that second quarter, hitting 5 threes in that first half where they went on that incredible run, a 28-2 run. It looked like it was over. But shout out to the Grizzlies bench who really made this happen because it was a wide open game until the fourth quarter. But Xavier Tillman banging a three, Zaire Williams scoring at the rim in the fourth quarter, and then Desmond Bane hitting a mile of a shot that was like really, really, really far away. But when Ja Morant came back after all that support and he scored 14 in that fourth quarter, you literally just watch one of the most athletic players in the game, the way he was able to just get to the rim. And that last shot, too much one-on-one-ish. Maybe Herb Jones could have used a little bit of help there, but he just went right at him and was able to just hang in the air. So, yes, storybook. Storybook ending there for Ja Morant.
34 points, 8 assists, 6 boards, a steal, and a block in 35 minutes of action, including that game-winning sort of layup, floater, whatever you want to call it, TK at the buzzer to give them the win in a huge comeback. I mean, this game looked like it was going to be over.
Yeah.
Sort of when that was a 30-5 run, 28-2 run, whatever you want to call the run. It looked like it was getting out of hand, and the Grizzlies sort of hung around, got contributions from a lot of these guys, and then the Ja Morant just takeover.
Yeah, Brandon Ingram was cooking for a while, but then the ball didn't find him, I feel like, the last couple of minutes for the Pelicans. And Herb was roasted. Completely. I mean, he got taken off the dribble twice before that last play with Ja Morant, and then I can't believe that he actually let him get into the lane again. Ja didn't make a shot outside of 8 feet last night. He was trying to get to the rim to shoot layups, which was working, and he got, I guess, a layup, maybe a floater, whatever you want to call it. Good shot by Ja Morant, but pretty weird to see nobody helping at the rim. That was just nonsense, I thought, by the Pelicans. It was scripted is what was happening. So, Willie Green said, there's no way we can put a big guy out there. It'd be too much challenge at the rim.
Yeah. I mean, you just see the difference in this team, though. The pressure that Ja Morant puts on a defense and just like, and his playmaking as well. I mean, he had a couple. I think that there was times in this game where the Grizzlies forgot how to play with Ja Morant to be ready for the ball. There was a couple that like, zipped out of guys' hands. They maybe weren't ready for it because he's just, he's so athletic. He's one of the most athletic guys in the league. He had those two and ones that really got the Grizzlies back in the game there in the third quarter. It was in short succession there. And I also like the defense he played at the end there. I wrote in my notes, 2 minutes left. Pelicans up two. I mean, they're still in control here. They got the ball. Ingram tried to throw like a sort of an entry pass to JV, who was down by the rim. He tried to lob it over everyone. I think it was going to get there, but Ja Morant has the hops, snuffs it out, sniffs it out, and then manages to keep the ball to the Grizzlies because he whipped it off Zion's leg, and they got that possession. And that was a big one, him playing defense there. And this was in a game where, like, he's huffing and puffing. He's like, oh, my God, I got to get the oxygen because, you know, you're playing at that NBA speed. I don't care how athletic you are. If you haven't done it in 8 months, it's going to be a shock to the system.
And it's totally true that he couldn't hit a shot outside the lane because he hasn't played a game in 8 months. He just needed to get in the lane more and more. And maybe this thing was scripted. It did feel a little, a tiny bit scripted in that Herb Jones was guarding him. And even the help that was coming from behind in Dyson Daniels, he could have maybe blocked it.
He didn't.
Yeah, I know. That's why maybe I thought this was well written in that he had five points in the first half. It's not like he was smoking hot in the first half, but because he hadn't played in a long time and started getting warm in the third quarter. And it was a double-digit deficit that to overcome in the fourth quarter even. But this is just a good sign for the Grizzlies that they have the absolute worst offense in the league. And then this guy comes back, and it's going to be like it has been the last few years, really.
It was so well-scripted, they had two endings to run with. Because there was going to be the one where he didn't call a timeout, or the Grizzlies, excuse me, didn't call a timeout, because Ja had the ball. He was ready to go in transition, and he was maybe going to throw it ahead. Maybe he was just going to take it. No, timeout. Okay, we'll just still give the ball to Ja Morant in the backcourt.
And he ran back to where they called the timeout anyways.
Yeah, exactly. He was like, well, we scripted it so well. Don't botch this. Like, just give me the ball there. And then, he took him in isolation. Sort of help come, but not great help. And got it to drop. But it was cool. It was an awesome moment. It's neat that for months, the conversation around this guy's been all about him in court cases and the disciplinary issues and, what all the suspensions, of course, and all these extracurricular stuff. And it was nice to be reminded when he does play, this guy is one of the faces of the league because of how talented he is.
Yeah, that was you couldn't have scripted it literally any better than that, I guess, unless you were going to have them playing at home in Memphis so that everybody was going insane when he finally made that shot. C.J. McCollum, a couple of the worst misses you'll see from C.J. McCollum. He had a wide open, or I don't know if it was open, a bad shot. Minute 45 left. It was a screen. It kind of felt like I need to take a shot here because Ingram has been monopolizing the ball so far. Bad air ball. Then he had a wide open look with 12 seconds left. Didn't hit the rim on the brick. That was pretty bad. I would have just kept going to Brandon Ingram time and time again. He was getting some great shots, but Xavier Tillman, I thought, was pretty solid defensively in this one as well. There was a time when Ingram definitely hit some fadeaways over him, but he also stood him up on one drive, and then he had a big rebound to help there after, I guess, the CJ miss. So a nice win for the Grizzlies, but the Pelicans, I think, got to be kicking themselves. They should have won that game.
Yeah. C.J. McCollum, he was either hitting threes or not even hitting the rim on his three-point attempts. There was a couple where he was, like, just to the side of the rim. You don't see that often from an NBA player, especially in a game where he was hitting a lot. And then Zion Williamson, a frustrating Zion Williamson game here. He got in foul trouble. It affected him. 13 points in the end, 5 of 12 shooting, 3 of 4 at the line, so he wasn't there a whole lot. Any thoughts on on Zion their test?
Well, yeah, the entire team was disappointing in those last couple of minutes. The two bad shots by CJ McCollum after having such a scorching hot game. And then Zion Williamson not being focused on whatsoever because I don't know why. He definitely was out of the flow after the third foul. It was, I guess it was in the second quarter where our former colleague Chigo Robinson had to walk with him back into the tunnel. He was so mad.
He was fuming mad.
Chigo wearing a mask. I'm not sure. Our former colleague who's wearing a mask. I'm not sure what. It was an interesting fact to me. But Zion went into the tunnel and then he came back. Like, he was just jumping around mad and he just wasn't. He didn't have a play called for him, I don't think. For the first 48 minutes, he was just, you know, that secondary guy, obviously. The lobs were there at times. But the Grizzlies also did a good job of breaking up those lobs. So it was odd to see the last couple minutes of this game from the Pels. You're right, Trey. They needed to win that game. They just needed a couple baskets. Yeah.
Well, the Grizzlies need it more. If they're going to get back in this thing, they need all of these type of victories. Never in NBA history had a player returned from an absence as long as 25 games and scored as many points as Ja Morant did last night. That's one of the weirder stats I thought we've ever gotten.
What
but
a pull.
34 points, and the game winner is pretty special. Anything else from Grizz Pelicans there, which was very exciting. Again, it didn't look like it was going to be in the first half. I mean, it was like, ooh. But then suddenly it was a game, like just like that. That's the NBA. You can't turn it off.
Yeah,
I thought
it was basically because of John. The first half, he only took 8 shots. In the second half, he took 16 shots. It looked like he was just trying to get in the flow and create in the first half. And then in the second half, Taylor Jenkins said, hey, no minutes limit. Just go for
just
it.
Just go.
Shoot it every time. We've been waiting 25 games to shoot it every time. And then Ja even went further to lie in the post game and said he was going to pass it into Jaren Jackson Jr. in the post. No, man. I don't think you were with 10 seconds left after the rebound. At the very least, good job by the rest of the Grizzlies to say, what are you doing, man? Just take over. That's what you've been doing.
Yeah, you see, I forget who said it on Twitter. It's like, you see why, like, Ja Morant is a type of player. He's the sun. Everybody else goes around him. You can't have Desmond Bane or Jaren Jackson Jr. as your sons. They got to be planets going around Ja Morant. And they had, you know, fine games with both of them. You see them when they fall more into their role. Desmond Bane was being asked to do too much. He just was through the first 25 games without Ja Morant. Jaren Jackson Jr. had a couple really good games here recently scoring the ball. But again, you don't want him to be the one that has to get you 40 or 35 or whatever. You want him playing defense, obviously contributing in other ways. And it's just like they get to fall in line here. And we'll see if they can make a pretty incredible run if they pull it off after starting 6-19 here, now improving to 7-19, to get back into a play-in or a playoff spot.
Yeah, they're 13th in the Western Conference, so it's not a lock. I think if we're writing a script here, Adam Silver, let's go 1-16, East and West. Just re-rank them because we got the Warriors and the Grizzlies that are have a potential of making a play-in spot there, but they're going to have better records, I think, than Eastern Conference teams. Anyway, the script was good. Yeah, Team Morant, Ja Morant's papa was there as well. They're 7-19 now. The Pelicans, a couple years ago, started 7-19 in 21-22, and they made the play-in spot. That's going to be hard to do. You know, we'll get to the Warriors. Like, the Grizzlies' schedule now, Marcus Smart should be coming back soon. That's amazing because they need some guard help. But they've got some tough games. They got the Pacers and then Hawks, Nuggets, Clippers, with another Pels game in there. So it ain't going to be easy to get back.
All right, let's go to the second game on TNT last night. Curry scores 33 points, helps the Warriors rally and to beat the Celtics. 132-126 in overtime. Steph gave us the night-night celebration that's become his go-to. And also, very entertaining game here. It looked like the Warriors were not going to win this game. It looked like the Celtics were going to keep rolling. And they get it to overtime and they win. TK, your big takeaways from this one.
I loved hearing Candace Parker yell, "And there's the meme!" After the rainbow from Steph Curry. What did Trace Jackson Davis call it? The pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Poetic stuff from TJD. And that guy was incredible last night. Trace Jackson Davis, what did he finish with in the end?
10 points, 13 boards,
3 blocks, including a huge one of Jaylen Brown there in overtime. I thought at halftime that this was going to end up being a blowout for the Celtics because they were in transition the entirety of the first half. Looney looked extra slow. Saric looked extra slow. So kudos to Steve Kerr for finally, like, realizing, We got to play our athlete out there. And Trace Jackson Davis, the pressure he was putting on the rim for lobs, his athleticism, and his brawn, I thought was really, really big for the Warriors last night. Warriors closed things out in the fourth quarter into overtime with Curry, Clay, Chris Paul, and then Kuminga and Trace Jackson Davis. Kuminga's defense at the end of the fourth quarter was huge. You saw how hyped Steph was after he stopped Jason Tatum, who was playing through a gimpy ankle there at the end of the possession. And then TJD, like we're saying, was great last night. Meanwhile, the Celtics, they were just kind of settling for threes. And that's when the Celtics look at their absolute worst. They went 8 for 33 from the field in the fourth quarter in overtime. They went 8 for 38 from three in second half. I saw Jared Weiss said that they broke their team record for most missed threes in a game. And they were just settling. Yeah. So I kind of think good shooting, contagious. Bad shooting, also contagious.
Yeah. I wrote down in my notes here, to go back to what you were sort of saying about the Warriors there, we had the Splash Brothers doing their thing, Chris Paul was out there, and then the young guys. This was the vision we were sold on the Warriors, right? The young meets old, meld them together, blend them together, and they'll be
incredible. I think it was supposed to be Wiseman there, though.
Yeah, exactly. But they got there. It may be Jackson Davis, like you said, and Kuminga, and then the Splash Brothers. I mean, they combined to hit 12 threes. And Curry, he played like the final 17 minutes of this game with 5 fouls. And obviously hit the big ones when it mattered. So you got the old in the Splash Brothers and then the new with your rookie big man there and Kuminga, especially the defense that he gave on Tatum. This is what they're trying to sell us on, Tess.
Yeah, I was buying. I thought, well, they drafted Trace Jackson Davis, so they're comfortable trading James Wiseman. But they didn't happen at the same time. No, they had already traded Wiseman. But this is Trace Jackson Davis, two consecutive games where he's played a good chunk in his rookie season. He's getting after it. Yeah, the block of Jaylen Brown in overtime was humongous. He had an incredible line when it comes down to it, a plus 25 as well, just because he was fantastic at being that number five spot. Now, can he do what Draymond Green does offensively? Probably not in terms of handling the ball, but Kevon Looney's got to watch for a guy who's going to eat a lot of his minutes, I imagine. But yeah, him and Kuminga, who stopped that Tatum really nicely. He had a big block as well. So people are very excited to be with him. But should Steph have even been on the floor? Like you said, 5 fouls in the third quarter there. And Steve Kerr had to say in the fourth quarter, you got to come back because you only hit one shot in the third. We need you desperately.
Yeah.
And he came back to play a ton. And he picked up a monstrous charge with 3 minutes left on Jaylen Brown as well, which is a tiny risk, I guess. That could have been a 6 foul and you're done.
Yep.
But he hit 5 huge threes and he had that awesome celebration. Yeah, whether it's a leprechaun, I don't know, the meme. but he got to jump with Chris Paul, who set him up for that beautiful, beautiful pass. Offensive rebound, 12 assists for Chris Paul. This team only had 10 turnovers. Very strange
Warriors,
night.
Yeah, that's very low for them. Klay Thompson appears to be Klay Thompson again over these last couple of games, too. He's averaging 26.5 points per game, shooting 51% from the field. He's a cool 23 for 46 from deep over those last four games. That's the Klay we know and love. And I did think it was funny. After Curry tied the game at 121, the Celtics missed 4 shots on that next possession where they kept getting the offensive rebound. It was crazy. Derek White, he missed a three. When Curry allowed like a really easy switch and Kuminga couldn't get up, White should have hit that, but he missed it. Don't worry, they get the ball back. Then Tatum took and missed that pretty contested three with Kuminga sort of right up on him. You know, he was looking for the foul. He's in my space and all that. It's not called. They get the ball again because Drew Holiday just like straight up yoinks it. Like, give me that. It gets kicked out to a wide open White. Those are the ones that always go in. On your second or third offensive rebound to the guy that just already missed one, he's obviously an NBA player, he's going to knock it down. He misses again. It still finds its way to Boston. Ball gets swung around to Jaylen Brown, who finally decides, okay, no more three-pointers on this one. I'm going to attack. He does. He gets right to the rim, and he sort of botches the layup.
Yeah.
It was like, I mean, I'll give Kuminga some credit. He sort of fought pretty hard to at least maybe get in Jaylen Brown's head, but he should have hit that layup. And there it was. You know, they finally, the Warriors come up with the ball there. But, like, any one of those three goes, they maybe pull this out. You know, then again, maybe Claire Curry hits another three just to answer it. But that was wild.
Well, Derek White's were both wide open. And yeah. he made 7 threes yeah. last night. He was really, really hot in the first half. He ended up taking 18, so the percentage wasn't great. But, I mean, either of those shots for Derek White, you're living with. And then, yeah, Jaylen Brown had a wide open layup. Maybe Kuminga challenged it, but if he dunks it, it goes in.
Yeah, Horford did his, like, classic sort of, like blocker screen move yes, when Jaylen attacked it. Like, again, Kuminga, like, he put a little effort into it. He, like, easily could have just let him take the layup. He still should have hit it. Don't get me wrong, but he tried. He tried to challenge.
Yeah, and it is unfortunate for Derek White. He had a lot of open shots. He's 7 of 18. those numbers are ridiculous. That they shot 58 threes in this game.
Yeah.
So many. Maybe they were listening to the broadcast. You mentioned Candace Parker earlier. She said 3 is higher than 2 or 3 is more than 2, and they just kept shooting them. And she questioned, why would you leave Derek White? They just continuously left him open. And that's why he was willing to take those shots. Most of the time, he's hot enough to
Yeah, hit. Yeah, for sure. Trey's right.
Looks.
I mean, that's
great looks, yeah.
Yeah, especially that second one that Drew comes up with the ball in the paint and just gives it to him, kicks it out. No one's even close to him, and he still missed it. I like to show some more love to the broadcast. I liked Reggie Miller with like 3 or 4 minutes to go. Again, Celtics still up. He pointed out, Boston messing with fire here. They're letting Golden State hang around. Reggie saw it. He saw the writing on the wall. It's like, they should have put this game away, and they haven't. And, you know, this team does have Curry and Clay. And he was right. In the end, they got a big, big victory. Any other notes on that one?
What ended up happening with Brandon Podziemski? I saw he went out, and he looked more so in discomfort than in a lot of pain. And then he was back on the bench during the second half. I saw he say he's going to be good going forward, but that was a pretty weird play. They just get hit in the back in a weird spot.
Yeah, but then he was obviously celebrating on the bench and all that. Hopefully he's okay because he's been really good for them.
Yeah, he must be banged up. That's my only note. It was surprising that he would play only 16 minutes in the game. It wasn't surprising that Kevon Looney only 14 minutes in the game just because of Trayce Jackson-Davis. Just looking at the starters and the young guys and how they're going to play. Kevon Looney's 2 straight games where he's played a pretty low amount of minutes because TJD, it's a good name, I guess. Good nickname, I
It's
guess.
A lot easier to say than his actual full name, which never Trace. Comes out like all Trace. That easy. Well, I like Trace, but then you got the Jackson Davis. Yeah. It's like you're saying 3 guys. You're like, who? Who are you talking about? He's 3 guys in 1.
He's going to eat Kevon's minutes, most likely.
Yeah. All right, moving on. The Bucks, Damian Lillard scored 40 last night. He joins the 20,000 point club in a win over the Spurs. No Wemby. Giannis got a triple-double. Love this quote from Dame, though. I don't want to fake downplay it like it's nothing. I know it's a big deal. It's a great accomplishment. It's a rare space to be in. Obviously talking about the 20,000 point club, which he exploded past. He's already got 20,034 points. 51st person in NBA history. 8th active guy to reach 20K, and he's the 17th fastest player in NBA history to get to that mark, too. Pretty impressive.
Think he got the game ball?
Oh, God, I hope so.
This is more impressive to me than passing Kyle Korver for 5th all time on the 3-point list, so I hope he did, and I hope people will give Damian Lillard the all-star start he so rightfully deserves. You know, he's always been behind Curry, Luka, Harden. I don't know who else started games in the Western Conference, maybe Westbrook at some point. But for a long time, Damian Lillard has been 3rd or 4th in the West, and now he's in the East. The team is good. He should probably get a start. The Bucks scored 44 points in the first quarter here. Most of Dame's shots were pretty good looks, I would have to say, to the point that the Bucks broadcaster in the first quarter said he might try to get another 1,000 tonight. And it felt like that. Yeah. It was just a matter of time before he got to 40.
Yeah, I don't think we need to spend a whole lot of time on this game.
No, absolutely not. You had 20,000, an achievement. Being that he's the 17th fastest, I think that means more than that he's the 51st to get to 20,000. Like that's
quick.
It is quick. And another Western Conference guy who could have started during Damian Lillard's time could be Chris Paul, maybe, because he's also got to 20,000.
I was going
to
say, quick trivia with this one. All the active players with 20K, it's pretty easy.
Yeah.
You want to list them
that
all?
That one was the only hard one, I thought.
Okay. Go ahead then.
LeBron.
Yes.
LeBron. Curry.
Yes.
Durant.
Yes.
Harden.
Yes.
Westbrook.
Yes.
Anthony Davis.
No.
Nah, he's a little shy probably.
So Chris Paul, you already said.
Oh, Chris Paul.
And then
one more.
I thought this was the toughest one.
Yeah, he's...
Obviously there's Dame now, but there's one more.
DeRozan?
Yeah. There it is. LeBron, KD, nice. Harden, Russ, Curry, Chris Paul, and DeMar DeRozan, and now Damian Lillard, active players with 20,000 points. Final game to touch on here. The Blazers erase a 22-point deficit. Shock the Suns, 109-104. Ayton revenge game. But this was a shocking result, I will admit. Blazers, a little feisty here suddenly. And Suns, what are you doing? But any thoughts on this game?
I will say that DeAndre Ayton obviously was ready to play this game. The most shots he's taken this year because he's playing against his whole team. There's no doubt about that. But it's the threes, really, that made this game happen. We remember Kevin Durant from this weekend getting mad that Quentin Grimes was getting wide open shots for the New York Knicks when he played them. How's that guy getting wide open threes? He doesn't even pass. He can't even dribble. He doesn't even take free throws. And in this game, that's exactly what happened. In the way it just happened to get them to 50% shooting threes because they're too open. The Suns were just not doing a good enough job defensively. So that's where the game was won for me with the Blazers. Although Anthony Simons sealed it at the end. I liked his quote after the game. I didn't know what I was going to. Floater, going off the bank. But and at the end, I just changed it up. So the Blazers knocking down the Suns. We're talking about the Grizzlies and the Warriors moving up in the standings. The Suns are a team that they could literally catch at some point soon, which stinks because of Bradley Beal's absence. They just do not look the same.
Yeah, Suns hit 5 3-pointers as a team in this game. Brogdon had 4 by himself off the bench for the Blazers. It's going to be tough to win games when you only hit 5 threes in today's game, but what do you think, TK?
Unfortunately, that's part of the way the Suns are built. They're 22nd in three-point rate. They're 24th in makes. So a team like Portland, if they have a hot shooting night, 14 for 28, 28 kind of a low number of three-point attempts as well. But if you're plus 9 from 3, that's plus 27 just right there. And you can beat the Suns like that, and that's probably why they are 3-7 in their last 10. Also not getting many good performances from anybody outside of their scorers. 66 points combined for Kevin Durant and Devin Booker last night, 38 for the rest of the team. They went 15 of 41 from the field, including Booker was not great in the second half, 4 for 12, and just didn't really have it going. So, yeah, I mean, the Suns, with their injuries, you know, it's got to be Booker, and it's got to be KD carrying, and obviously they can do that from time to time, but they can lose on a hot shooting night against literally anybody.
I saw somebody in the stream team before we went live wondering, I guess concerned is the better word, man, is Brogdon making the Blazers too good? Are we going to win too many games with him playing the way he is right now? And, you know, Sharp obviously injured in this one, but some of these guys turning it on a little bit, finding their way. Uh-oh, are we going to be too good? We're going to be somewhere in the middle? We want to be bad again. I think they were half joking, but you do wonder. We've seen this before. The Jazz come to mind, obviously. We're really hot to start last year. It's like, okay, let's trade some of these sort of like vet guys that are winning, helping us win too many games here, and let's just sort of be bad again here for a couple of years. But we'll see. I'm sure some of these names on this team, be it Brogdon, be it Grant, will be in trade rumors come February.
Right. Yeah, you would have to think so. But I will say, I liked what I saw from Scoot Henderson in the first half.
Yeah.
He was playing downhill quite a bit. He finished with 9 points and 5 assists. Also 5 turnovers, but who cares? Because he was playing some good defense, at least, down the stretch on Devin Booker. So, I don't know. I haven't seen every Scoot game, but he kind of looked impressive to me, at least in the first half. And also, I was thinking that he was wearing tall socks. So he kind of looks like Walt Williams playing for the Blazers.
Oh, the Wizard.
Yeah, but I think they're leggings. Like, I think there could be a gap, but it didn't look like it last night.
Gotcha. All right, those are the 4 games from last night. Anything else?
Well, it was just unfortunate. Scoot is, I like how it's kind of quiet and people aren't talking about him because he had the bad start, then he got injured, and now he's had a lot of reps. He looked a lot better than a guy coming off the bench for the Phoenix Suns that I thought could have replaced Bradley Beal, Eric Gordon. Just let him roll, baby, because he has shot pretty well from three-point land. But this guy's played a lot of minutes in his career. I think they should have just relied on him a little bit more, but also they should be guarding three-point shots.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're hitting the beach to answer some of your great questions, including us fixing the Christmas Day schedule. Don't go anywhere. All right, still here in the Classic Factory. Let's hit the beach to answer some cues.
You got the buzz, I got the rockets. You got the nuts, I got the chocolates. We got that chit chat down pat, blah blah blah. You got that certain special, je ne sais quoi. Let's go to the beach, baby.
Yeah, let's go to the beach. God, that slaps, that song. First one from Craig in Harrisburg, Ontario. Writes in, hello, No Dunks. What Christmas Day game should be flexed? And what teams would you replace them with? Love you guys. We love you too, Craig, up there in Ontario. Hope you get some snow on Christmas Day in Harrisburg. I'm sure you will. That might be in the snow belt for all I know. Let's remind everybody of the Christmas Day schedule. Got this from NBA TV on Twitter. We got the Bucks-Knicks. We always got that game in Madison Square Garden. Then it's Warriors-Nuggets. Then it's Celtics-Lakers. Then it's Sixers-Heat and Mavericks-Suns. All these games, by the way, on ESPN or some of them on ABC. Mm. Is that the first year where we don't do the old some on TNT and some on ESPN? Or am I crazy?
Probably not.
No? Yeah. Was last year
my
like
guess
this?
Is that that's probably always negotiated into CBAs. Maybe, I don't know. But I was negotiating with my mom today saying, you better add ESPN to your cable package because I'm coming home on Christmas.
She doesn't have ESPN, I guess.
She canceled it once, you know, we got canceled.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't need the sports package
anymore. Don't need
anymore.
The NBA TV anymore. And watch it on YouTube. Okay, so let's answer Craig's question here. You've seen the schedule. Is there a game you would take out, and what would you replace it with, or what would you change?
I found it a little difficult to just say, hey, get rid of one of these games, because usually it's the Knicks game that's like, okay, get this out of here. They're never fantastic.
It's tradition,
but now,
baby.
But now they're so good, and Jalen Brunson is so good, I want to see a Bucks-Knicks. And I also want to see Denver as the second game. I want them to be there after winning a championship.
I like now, that the Nuggets are at that 2:30 slot, because we usually get them on Christmas Day in the later games, mm-hmm. when you're maybe a little basketballed out at times, because there are a lot of times playing in that the last slot, really, but I like that 2:30 there for them.
It's an early wake-up, though, for the Nuggets.
For them, yeah, that's true.
So after that, Celtics-Lakers, still good. The next one, though, Sixers-Heat, I was okay getting rid of.
Okay.
I'd lose them for Magic-Wolves.
Whoa.
Two really good teams from either conference. Like in terms of the Sixers-Heat, you're going to get a great performance from Embiid. You're going to get a great performance from Maxey. You might not get a good Heat performance. I kind of want to see the Magic and Wolves just duke it out. Great defenses. Obviously, some great offense with Cat and Ant on one side. But lots of good players. But again, I wasn't that upset.
I
wasn't that upset with the fivesome
okay.
that they've selected in the end.
What are you doing here, TK?
Yeah, I kind of feel like Tass. It's like still pretty good, even though we're a month and a half into the season. It's a little too much Bucks-Knicks for me. This will be the fourth time they played in the season already. They played the 23rd in Madison Square Garden. Throw on a Santa hat and convince yourself it's Christmas. You're getting the very same game.
Right.
But I also love seeing a game in the Garden on Christmas, so I'm fine with that. Like, looking game-wise, I kind of feel like Golden State-Denver is the least close game here. But I ain't taking Steph Curry off of Christmas Day. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Jokic should have his game there. So maybe Dallas-Phoenix, I guess, is least interesting. Kyrie hasn't played in quite some time. He might still be out. Bradley Beal, I assume, will still be out. But you got KD and Booker. You got Luka Doncic. So I don't know. I agree. Minnesota could have a game. Oklahoma City could have a game.
Yeah.
Sacramento could have a game. I don't think anybody else from the Eastern Conference really stacks up to those teams. Shout out to the Magic. I know you've been surprising this year, but you need a little bit of team success under your belt before one surprising half of a month of a season. So I'm fine with it sticking the way it is. But if you want to throw Minnesota in there at some point, I would be happy with that.
Yeah, I would like to see like a Wolves versus Thunder or a Wolves versus Kings. And when you guys were talking this out, I was starting to think, like, would this be a cool little wrinkle for the NBA to do? And what I mean by that is to have the team that is in first place in either conference get the Christmas Day game, like at a certain point. I know we already make this like a nightmare for these schedule makers, but that would be pretty cool and have like a little bit of juice on the line for like a team like Minnesota that at a certain point, whatever you pick the cutoff date is, because you obviously need to sell the tickets and stuff like that a week or two out in advance, but I don't know, by December 15th, if you're in first place, you get a Christmas Day game. That's sort of cool if you could pull it off with the schedule. But I just wish the Wolves were in here because they're the best team in the West right now. And they're fun to watch. What do you think about that idea, though?
I think the schedule makers can make it happen.
Yeah, I think they could.
It's not that insane. It's a good sign here that we went through 10 teams playing 5 games that are all talent heavy at the top, and they're all just really good. That's how much talent there is in the NBA. You can go 11, 12, 13, 14 if you want to, you know, flex, do some flexings, drop one, add one on ESPN, do. I like saying two like that. I don't know why. But, like, yeah, just adding it to the skid. Why not?
It is true. Of all the teams, the 10 teams we have playing on Christmas, there's not a bad team. Like, sometimes we get – like, the Warriors and Suns are not, like, you know, elite right now, but no one would say they're bad teams. A lot of people would still think they'll go quite far in playoff series and stuff like that. But we do, from time to time, get, like, a really shitty team in the mix. Sometimes it's the Knicks because they're always on Christmas Day. Luckily, they've been pretty good over the last couple of years. But not bad. Good stuff here. Can't wait for these games. All right, let's go to the next one.
Who is the ideal second star to join Tyrese Haliburton on the Pacers? Or who do you think is the most likely to join the Pacers? If you were GM, how would you build the team around him? I'd trade McConnell and firsts for Caruso and Buddy and firsts for OG as well. That's Rooster making moves to try and strengthen the Indiana Pacers.
So he's trading, McConnell and first for Caruso, and then in a separate trade, Buddy Hield and first for OG.
I think you can...
Trying to get some defense in there. Makes some sense.
Yeah.
I don't think trading multiple firsts for both of those guys makes sense.
What's that?
I don't think trading multiple firsts for both of those guys makes sense.
Multiple. No. Multiple. No. What about one for OG? Do you like OG beside Haliburton?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that would be fine. But this guy's saying trade multiple firsts for Caruso and multiple firsts for OG. That would be a short-sighted move, I do believe.
Yeah, trading four first-round picks for some of those guys. Is there a player, then, that you would like to see, a second star, beside Haliburton?
It's tough to say. Yeah. Tyrese Haliburton compared to Steve Nash a lot these days, which means he needs a Sean Marion and an Amari Stoudemire. Those are tough guys to find. So in the Marion role... OG kind of fits that.
Yeah.
You know, he can guard up and down both ways. He can shoot it from outside. He can run the court, though he's not necessarily like a dynamic fast break player, I don't think. And then there's some other names that probably aren't gettable at all, but would be interesting. Amen Thompson barely plays for the Rockets. They ain't giving up on him this early, but he would be like my ideal guy to be next to Haliburton right now. Who knows if he'll ever be able to shoot threes, but... can guard 1 through 5, super athlete. I'd love to see that. Herb Jones, big part of the Pelicans, but maybe they move on from him. Dyson Daniels, I think, would be a nice fit next to Haliburton as well. Then you talk about the Stoudemire-type role. Lauri Markkanen, or one of the guys from Minnesota. They're having an awesome season, but eventually there's going to be a salary cap crunch for Minnesota. So could Indiana get Naz Reid? Or maybe even Karl-Anthony Towns? I don't know. They would both look nice next to Tyrese Haliburton because the Stoudemire role has changed. You can't just be a role guy in today's NBA. You got to be able to shoot from three as well. And I think Markkanen, Naz Reid, and Towns can all do both.
Right. So if Haliburton is Nash or Nash is Haliburton, you did the Marion and Amari route. What about going the Dirk route in the Mavericks days? And who would that be? Maybe that's Cat.
Also comparison, probably. Yeah, yeah.
I like that as a second star. Well, it's not happening right now, of course not, with Minnesota being the best team in the West, but it makes sense. That type of guy to pair with him for sure.
Yeah, Ryder Rooster did an okay job here at getting Caruso and OG, but Trey did a better job of trying to pay, let's say, Amen Thompson... Pay a little less for Amen Thompson and Dyson Daniels rather than just give all your first picks for Caruso, who the Bulls are asking a lot for, and then the same thing for OG Anunoby. Because OG at the top of this list, plus you know somebody like a Dyson Daniels out there, will be great on this team. They need defenders, is what it comes down to. And OG would be a decent comparison to Sean Marion in that he can guard everywhere. The Pacers are bad defensively. They need guys who can guard everybody. And OG Anunoby at the four, you know, obviously the Pascal Siakam comparisons are happening out there at the four as well, over somebody like Obi Toppin, who's just struggling against every big guy in the league, would be fantastic. That would be really, really great. It seems so right. I don't know how much Masai Ujiri is asking for in terms of picks.
A lot.
It seems like a lot. It seems
for sure.
Like it.
He's not asking for one. He's asking for many.
It's a rental. It's a rental.
No, but I'm with you. Like, if the Pacers are – if they're seriously going to, like, push all their draft capital in as much as they want to and can for a star or a guy that you want to pair alongside Haliburton moving forward – yeah, it makes sense that it's like an OG or a Siakam. Like, that's the move. Of course, you get into convincing them to sign and all of that, both of those guys in either instance. So, but yeah, it's going to take, it would take multiple first round picks for Siakam. I think most people would agree with that. And probably, yeah, one or two, at least one for OG and player to make the contracts work. But that's a, it's a likely move, I guess. That's the question here from Rooster. Waking up early to send that one in. Good stuff. All right, next one here from See the Truth 96 by way of YouTube. Yo, 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 no dunkaroo. First time asker here. So a while back, I was surprised to find out that Dominique Wilkins played 27 games for the Orlando Magic in the 98-99 season. As a pretty well-researched basketball historian, this shook me to my core and made me wonder what other obscure basketball history have I missed? My question, when was a time you were shocked by a fact that you thought you were knowledgeable about? Good cue. Tough cue, I thought, to answer this one. See the Truth 96. What do you have, Trey?
Well, along the same lines as See the Truth here, I was just looking at Dale Davis's basketball reference page last night. I don't remember him as a Golden State Warrior, but apparently it happened. so there's one. But a big answer for me, I was doing some research for a short that's coming out in not too long, and I found out that 2008 is the first year the NBA had five Christmas Day games.
Oh, wait.
I don't know when I thought they started, but right. I was like, oh, interesting. That's good to know. Can you guess the leading scorers from every Christmas Day game in 2008? I'll tell you the game.
Yeah, okay.
The Cleveland Cavaliers beat the Washington Wizards 93-89.
LeBron.
No. 93-89. You're going to love these scores.
Oh, my God.
Danielle Marshall hit
the threes?
No. This guy's a big time scorer. Became a teammate of LeBron, though he did this for the Wizards.
Oh, Larry. This game. No, not Larry Hughes.
No.
Antoine Jameson.
Antoine Jameson.
Hey, nice, all right.
I don't know how this game was on. on Christmas Day, the Cavs were 25-4. They had LeBron. That makes sense.
Oh, wow.
The Wizards were 4-23 coming into this game, and Gilbert Arenas was out. Like, he had surgery over the summer. I don't know how this game got scheduled.
Had they already had, like, their fun beef, these squads,
they
though,
probably
in the postseason?
Did in the 07 playoffs.
Yeah.
So you can see that thinking. Running that back, yeah. But you could also give LeBron a better opponent on this one. All right, the Lakers beat the Celtics 92-83, leading score.
Kobe.
Yeah, nice one. All right. This goes down as maybe the worst Christmas game I can remember. The Orlando Magic beat the New Orleans Hornets 88-68.
Holy moly.
Yeah. I think David West led the Hornets in scoring with 12 points this game.
So Dwight?
Not Dwight. He did play.
Hedo.
Hedo Turkoglu.
Those three.
Great game on 2008 Christmas Day. The Spurs beat the Suns 91-90. Grant Hill got a layup with 4 seconds left. And then Roger Mason Jr. hit a game winner.
But
who was the leading scorer in that game?
Tony Parker.
Hey, and finally, the Mavs beat the Blazers 102-94. Who was the leading scorer?
Mavs beat the Blazers?
That's right.
Dirk.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you have?
Got
26.
It.
30.
Oh, 30. Wow. Holy moly.
Big score on the day. 30 points.
Ton. That's a ton. Yeah. Do you have an answer to this one? Something you were shocked by a fact that you thought you were sort of knowledgeable about?
Well, I was shocked to learn this recently. Damian Wilkins, who is Dominique's nephew, just because the Dominique was mentioned. Damian's heading basketball at Overtime Elite. He's working for OTE, where all the kids are making dunks. So I was just surprised by that. Was that interesting to you? Probably not.
So his dad is Gerald Wilkins, and his uncle is Dominique. Yeah.
I stuck to the Raptors that Hakeem Olajuwon played for the Houston Rockets for a long, long time. And then he played.
You didn't know that?
He played for 1 year at the end of his career for the Toronto Raptors, even though he had a 3-year contract. He'd only played for one because he was 39 after they traded a lot for him. And then he went and attended Houston Rockets games, or at least one game, sat in the front row while he was getting paid by the Raptors for his next 2 years, getting paid $5 million. Good for him. Either way, just a shock. I looked at the stars as the Dominique reference was done to see which guy I was surprised by at the end of his career. I didn't know Dale Davis was a Warrior. I also, a lot of people don't know Hakeem, 39. looking all right.
Started like a lot of games for that team.
Went to the playoffs.
Started 37 games for the Raptors in his last year. I struggled with this. So I asked Nora this morning the question. Hey, help me out. What should I say? Here's what she said, and I thought it was funny. She said, you know Hugh Grant's full name? I said, I don't. I don't think I was supposed to be knowledgeable about that, but no, I don't. Hugh Grant's full name is Hugh John Mungo Grant. Now, she said she thought it was just Hugh Mungo Grant. But I looked it up, and there is a John in there. I wish there wasn't.
Mungo?
Yeah, that would have been, that would have been really good. Hugh Mungo Grant.
Is he named after his uncle? Uncle Mungo? Who sang that song? In the summertime, oh, yeah. When the leather is fine.
No, see, I'm not that knowledgeable. No idea.
Hugh John Mungo Grant. Is Hugh short for anything?
I don't think so.
Not. I feel like not when it's spelled H-U-G-H. H-U-E, maybe you're getting a Hubert.
Mm. Yeah.
H-U-G-H, Hug H.
Hugh Mungo-is Grant.
Hugh Mungo.
Yeah, that's maybe awesome. They wanted Mungo to be his middle name.
Mungo must be a family name, you would think.
Must be.
But they didn't want him to be called Hugh Mungo, so they had to throw in, what are John, we going to throw in? Yeah, John.
Yeah.
Hugh Mungo silly. Grant.
All right,
next question here. From AK Nugs Life, which talented young roster would you rather have, OKC or Orlando? It's a tough one, Nugs Life.
Is it?
Nah.
Nah. Yeah. I mean, I like it. It's a fun question. These are both like good, young, talented teams, but I'm quite easily taking the Thunder over the Magic. Their roster right now. Because you're like, as you go through it, you're taking SGA over Paolo 10 times out of 10 at this point. You're taking Chet over Franz Wagner. I think a lot of people would. You're taking J-Dub over the Magic's next best starter, which is maybe Jalen Suggs. Starter. And then are you taking super sub Cole Anthony over the subs for the Thunder? Isaiah Joe? Wallace? Maybe. But you've skipped over Giddy and Dort in the starting lineup for OKC as well. So I'm going OKC. I think it's just a better, more talented roster. Especially top-end talent.
They've got a perfect big three already locked in with Shea, J-Dub, and Chet.
Yeah.
That's three positions.
Yeah.
Now you just got to figure out who fits around them, and maybe they're on the roster, maybe they're not. But yeah, this is an easy question to me. The bigger question is, if you go back to the 2022 draft, are you taking Paolo or Chet?
Right. Ooh. Well.
Chet's awesome.
Yeah, he is.
Paolo's awesome.
Yeah.
I think they're actually both happy with how it played out because the Magic need a number one guy. I think Paolo is a number one guy. At the very worst, he's like a 1.5. And I've got a lot of hope for him in the future. Whereas Chet, if he's the number one guy, things definitely look different. He doesn't seem to be a playmaker the way Paolo is, but he's obviously going to be one of the five best defenders on the other side of the ball. So surely OKC, already having Shea on the team, is happier with Chet than they would be with Paolo. But right. I mean, I think that's a tough call.
Yep.
Are you taking Paolo or Chet straight up? I don't know.
Yeah, the Magic looking at number one guy, would be extremely happy with what they did, period. But Chet Holmgren looks so good recently, offensively. He's doing that spin dance on guys who are trying to guard him on the perimeter. He's taking them into the lane and just spinning on them and then throwing it down. And obviously, he doesn't have to be the number one guy on that team just because Shea does so much. So he shines in that. You know, just that support role, and then he shines defensively as well. He's so good, and that's why it's not only do you get incredible offense from Shea, Chet, Jalen. These guys are so good defensively, both of them. Chet Holmgren has 71 blocks in 25 games. He's second already in total blocks. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, 66 steals in 25 games, number one defending in that category. Shout out to Schlecht who pointed that out. And it's totally true. Shea's already stood out as a defender. Chet's already doing that. So they're just damn good. So Nugs Life, maybe OKC is not getting enough love from everybody out there. I mean, I know we talk about it, but maybe because they don't have a Christmas game. Maybe, you know, countrywide they're not being talked about enough. But
they got to get into postseason matchups and start, you know, putting up fights and winning postseason series.
Yeah.
And then you're going to get all the attention in the world. But I'm with Trey. I mean, the 1-2-3 they got right there, I mean, it's like sort of exactly what you would want in today's game at those positions. Sort of check, check, check. All right, next one here from Emmanuel. looking back at the NBA 75th anniversary team, should Joel Embiid have been included? And if so, which of the new 25 would he replace? Interesting. Interesting question. Sort of just like caught me by surprise. Came out of left field here. Going back to the NBA 75/76 team from a few years ago. Should Embiid have been included? What do you think, TK?
I mean, he's second behind Nikola Jokic for me.
Yeah.
Jokic had two MVPs at the time of the 75th anniversary. I think he is first before Embiid.
Yeah.
But who are you taking off is the question.
Yeah.
Two guys? Yeah. I got Paul Arizin out of there.
Yeah.
And there's that new, but I got Paul Arizin.
He's not part of the
you're
new.
Gone. You're gone, buddy. Like, literally, who are you going to take off? Dame Lillard? He's never won an MVP.
Right.
Anthony Davis.
Melo.
Yeah.
Kawhi Leonard. Titles, two finals MVPs, but not a ton of regular season accolades. I mean, all NBA multiple times. Dominique Wilkins, the greatest Hawk ever. Gary Payton, the greatest Seattle Supersonic ever. Like, yeah. It's tough, right?
It's tough.
It's tough, Emmanuel.
I mean, and even like, I sort of looked at it like this. Like, okay, could you be pissed Embiid wasn't in there? Yes. Oh, yeah. Who do you take off to replace him with? That's the tough part. But I think there are guys above Embiid that have even more of a case, a bigger snub, if you want to call it that. You said Jokic. That's a no-brainer. I think he was one of only two MVPs in history to not make the list. Derrick Rose, the other one. And he had two, for crying out loud. So that was a little weird. I remember Klay Thompson was very pissed he did not make this list.
Yes.
And I think had a case. If he wasn't injured the seasons prior with the torn ACL and the torn Achilles tendon, if he had been playing, I think he helped his chances of probably getting in here. Although still, you start to run out of spots. So him, I mean, Luka, I know, you know, super young, has all NBA selections at the time they did this and all-star selections and all that. And then Dwight Howard was the big, like, holy crap, this guy was like one of the best centers for a decade. Had three defensive player of the years, 8-time all-star, 8-time all-NBA, and he didn't make it. So, I mean, I had him be like sort of third, fourth, wherever you want to slot him in terms of being like, ooh, that's a snub. But man, good luck figuring out who the hell you're scratching. From the new 25? Oh, I couldn't figure it out.
At the time when it was made in fall of 21, it was the Anthony Davis, I think, that made a lot of people's hair curl.
Yeah, it was 80 and Dame, I think, were the two that people were like,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah, Jokic only had one MVP at the time, I guess, so there was that. But still.
Yes, good point. That's true. He was on his way to winning.
He was on his way that season. And then when you look back at Anthony Davis's resume, it's freaking damn good. I know he did all that with the Lakers, really, but it is so good. So he belongs on it. The question really, it should come down to which oldies. You said Paul Ayers in their trade. Those are the guys that should be off this list.
Yeah,
not
they
the
didn't
newbies.
Take anybody off it.
They didn't.
I'm taking out Bill Sharman, too.
Oh.
Because every time I see his picture on Basketball Reference, I'm like, is that Skeets?
I look like Bill Sharman?
Yeah, you got a Sharman look.
Sweet. You can't take him off, then.
Yeah, exactly.
My it's God, he's a though. Lock. Bill Sharman, whew, that guy was a bucket, was he? I don't know.
Yeah, Bullseye Bill?
Hell yeah.
Battling Bill? Willie, they called him. At least according to Basketball Reference.
Guy was so good, they made him into toilet paper.
Billy.
Yeah, he looks, yeah.
Looking like a young Skeets.
Yes.
I can see it.
But there was a lot of current NBA players that voted. Actual NBA players voted for the top 75. So Giannis was asked, who should be on this? And he had to look back and look at Bill Sharman's resume. I mean, they never watched those guys.
No,
so it was impossible
not.
To take them off. But they voted, yeah, Dame, who is now a 20,000-point scorer.
Yeah,
right. They did pretty good. They did pretty good.
Yeah.
And Anthony Davis, I like the last couple of years. He's playing really well. So I could understand if his career ended then, you would complain. But he's still only 30 freaking years old, so it's kind of hard to do.
Don't worry. Embiid and Jokic and Luka, they're going to make the top 100.
I would think so.
Now, will it be top 100 or will it be top 101? Will he add another 25? Because they really botched that, too. Let's
wow,
not forget
yeah.
that part. We got 76 names on this damn list.
It's true.
And I'm still convinced about the conspiracy theory that they took Kyrie Irving off of this team and that he was actually going to be on there. We had the webpage and everything. Remember that whole conspiracy? Bad timing there for Kyrie. Holy moly. We'll see. We'll see.
Too many social medias out there. I think I start thinking things are conspiracy theory. Like the Memphis-New Orleans game was scripted yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I think so, yeah.
You saw the script. It got leaked.
I saw the script. Dyson Daniels, don't block John Morant's shot. We need that. Yeah, I think that happened. Yeah, right. Anyways, no, I got a card for my next question.
Oh, okay.
Here from SlamPiece38. Favorite Christmas drink? What do you got? Hot toddy, hot chocolate, eggnog, or something else? Right, SlamPiece38.
What do you got in your card?
This is not from SlamPiece38. Oh, this is from a fan of ours, Mark G.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he sent in a recipe for an eggnog that I made last year, and I'm so excited to give it a second try this fall. Because last year I made it a little too hot. The eggs were too hot. I was wondering if I was cooking the eggs, if I was cooking liquid eggs, because they just got too hot in the pan.
So that's your answer, obviously.
Oh, God, yeah, it was good. It was good.
Okay.
So it's going to be even better this year. Shout out to Mark G.
Trey, JD, do you have a favorite Christmas drink?
Nah. I don't have a favorite, but the only time I'll order a flavored drink from a coffee shop is when they got peppermint in it. Okay. I do love a peppermint mocha. Yeah. Grown-ups hot chocolate. Mm. A wired hot chocolate, if you will.
For sure, yeah.
JD, are you a hot toddy guy?
No.
No?
No. Okay. Guinness tastes better at Christmas for some reason. Mm. I don't know why. Maybe the sparkling lights, maybe the Christmas music. I don't know. Oh. But you know, I drink Guinness year-round, so, but it's just extra special.
It's nice.
At Christmas time.
Such a meal, too.
Well, I would argue that it's lighter than actual beer, but yeah, sure. It's creamy and delicious,
yes.
And that's what you want on Christmas.
Yeah. I'm going to add another drink here to the mix. I don't mind these sort of holiday old fashions that people are whipping together. There's two varieties I've come across. There's sort of the fall spiced version of the old fashioned.
Yeah, like a pumpkin spice.
Yeah, like the bourbon with the cinnamon and the cloves and you know, the maple syrup, the nutmeg, whatever.
Yeah.
And then there's more of a Christmas, I'd say, old fashioned, which is like your rye whiskey with the simple syrup of like more cranberry.
Oh.
And like orange, like those
cranberry
flavors. Yeah, yeah. They're both pretty damn tasty. You get your syrup right. You get your simple syrup right.
Yeah.
Infused correctly, you can make a really good old fashioned.
So cranberry and orange. There's usually some orange, like an orange peel or whatever. Yeah. But yeah.
But the cinnamon stick in those, either of those. Whew,
yeah.
We want to talk about the holidays. Let's talk about it. We just did. We just did.
Thank you, Slam Piece.
All right. Great questions, guys. Keep them coming. All throughout the holidays. You never know when we're going to hit the beach again. We got to take one more break. When we come back, Tess has Tweet of the Night. Don't go anywhere.
Spring is the best time to add new challenges to your training just in time for those warm summer days. Pool season's coming soon, so I've been hitting the weights with Peloton and my guy Adrian Williams, trying to get my muscle on in order to expand my cannonball splash radius. Peloton's varying class lengths were designed with your training plan in mind. It's easy to personalize your workout. Whether you'd like to add a 10-minute core session at the end of your strength class or take a 60-minute power zone ride to increase your endurance, Peloton classes are designed to help focus on your needs and goals. There are a variety of classes like boot camps, boxing, full body strength, or marathon training, all created to grow your skills or push you to improve in what you already excel in. And their expert coaches and nonstop vibes will push you to new levels of strength and endurance, keeping you on your toes while giving you the professional coaching you need. Shout out to Adrian, Aditi, Andy, and Emma. I love you all so much. Whether you prefer to run outdoors, row or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton has everything you need to get you where you're going. Get your head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Just excuse me here. I wanted to drop our P.O. Box address into the stream team here. People wanted the address. Oh, somebody already did it. Look at that.
Don't
I was just about to do it. People wanted to send in drink recipes.
Captain Jazz wants to send in a drink recipe. Yeah.
And yes, our P.O. Box office is on Spalding Drive. It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And we filmed the show on a Wilson.
That's right.
Drive.
That's right. We love basketball.
I don't want to reveal the entire.
No, you don't want to tell them where the classic
people
factory
breaking
is.
Breaking in here and recording their own podcasts.
We're the only ones making classics in this factory.
Sending in recipes, though.
Let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter.
Oh, it's an oldie. didn't go from last night. I scoured the tweets.
Did you?
I scoured the X's. Yeah, unfortunately I did.
Wow.
There just weren't many good ones. What? Or maybe it's my feed. Maybe the for you isn't as good as the following. Both of them just weren't good. It's a play off an old tweet that we had off Nick Buccelli, who made some of our cards.
Oh, yes.
And now he's made a second version. Thank you, Nick Buccelli, for upgrading. Back by popular demand, as you say. One of us on each of a sports card. And we changed it up. Skeets is Baltimore Oriole.
Billy Ripken.
Billy. I thought Billy was not as big as that. He looks ripped.
No, that's me.
Big.
That's my body.
Okay. I got an old Raptor t-shirt.
Yeah.
Shirt. And
yeah, yours looks like a draft portrait, I feel like. You just went number one in the draft, but you're putting it for your thumb.
Instead of doing number one with his finger, he goes number one with his thumb.
Mine also looks photoshopped because it doesn't look like my neck should bend that way.
That photo makes me laugh every time.
It is a weird one. Trey's got his Taco Bulls jersey on.
Oh, yeah.
I like that. I like the position you're in.
Thanks, man.
That looks like a card.
Shout out to K's Werb, sent those over many moons ago. Got the Apple Watch on.
You're on a court, taking a knee. It does look like it. You got drafted. And JD with his, was that your haircut?
It was a fresh cut at the clubhouse barbershop.
Was it? You won the Masters.
Oh, that too. I had my fresh cut and I won the Masters that day.
Yeah. Number one draft lottery pick. They make golf carts. Not sure if they look like that, but yours looks cool, man.
Golf carts?
Golf carts. They make golf carts and golf carts, yes. I saw Tiger's son had a big chip in. What's his name again? He's got a cool name.
He does have a cool name.
I think it's Mungo.
Mungo Woods.
Is it Cub?
What's his name? What's this guy's name?
I think his daughter is also really good.
Charlie! That's just a cool name.
It's an easy name. Should have remembered
cool
that
name,
one.
Man.
Charlie Chuck Woods. Wood.
Chuck Wood.
Chuck Wood.
How much wood could a wood chuck wood?
Anyway, he had a cool shot I saw. Dad was pumped. Once again, speaking to the idea of like, Tiger Woods is going to be more excited for potential success from either of his children in athletic achievements than he is of his own.
Yeah, a lot of people I saw were tweeting us as well. Jermaine O'Neal's daughter is apparently like a great volleyball player, and I think they just won the national championship.
They did. They beat Nebraska.
Women's volleyball. Oh, yep. Nebraska, and they're like a dynasty, aren't they?
That's right. Texas won, though.
I can't believe I know so much about women's college volleyball right now, but apparently there's a bunch of like daughters of former NBA players who are now dominating college volleyball, which kind of makes sense.
It's so funny you said that. I was watching it. I know it happened a couple nights ago, maybe on the weekend, but they were replaying it yesterday before the games came on. I was watching a little bit. I forgot how awesome volleyball is to watch, man. It's awesome. It's so good, man, when they get the rallies going, the dives and stuff.
Yeah.
So good. And I did see Jermaine O'Neal's daughter.
Yeah, what else?
They're all tall and athletic.
University of Wisconsin, I think, has two daughters, and one of them is Mike Schmreck. His daughter plays. I forget who the other one was.
Is Chase Budinger still playing
beach
volleyball? Yeah.
I think he is. Yeah.
Maybe the Olympics. I don't know.
But court volleyball, better than beach volleyball. It's just more happening.
Yeah. I mean, I like both. I like both, but I do love the action of indoor volleyball.
Yeah.
Better cheers.
Oh, man, they cheer. They cheer after every, whatever you call it, possession. Win or lose, the point. Team comes together.
Right.
To dap it up. Let's talk it out. Let's go. Here we go. It's pretty cool. Yeah. Imagine we did that in basketball. Every score, everybody's getting a good job. All right, go on. We can do better. Let's go.
Cool claps.
Yeah.
Calvin Booth's daughter, the other daughter.
Oh. Yeah.
Nice.
I mean, it makes sense. Like, I'm assuming a lot of these women are quite tall.
Yeah, exactly.
Are very athletic, can jump super high. You want those skills in volleyball.
Wow. Mike Schmreck's daughter is 6'9", Anna.
And 6'9"?
And Calvin Booth's daughter, Carter, is 6'7". Tallest players in the 2023 NCAA volleyball semifinals.
That's a tall
spiker.
Wow.
Maybe a middle hitter, blocker. What positions are there? Libero.
I only know the setter. they're the tiny ones.
Yeah, like Chris Paul's daughter's going to grow up to be a setter or something like that. Could be. Eventually.
Yeah. All right. That's it for us. Fun tweet there from Tassie. Fun show. Think it was a classic. You tell us. Leave us a 5-star rating and review on whatever podcast platform you download and listen to us. And hit the like button. Subscribe here on YouTube. We really appreciate it. As we get to 100,000 subs, tell your friends about the show. We're back tomorrow. Tassie's off to the Great White North to get some snow for everybody down here in Atlanta. So you have fun.
Thank you. Thank
have
you,
a
thank
great
you.
Christmas break with you and your family, and say hi to all our friends and family up there. But TK and I will be here with JD tomorrow, and then on Friday we got that squad episode. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, Clipper not Bro that, won't be on that. It. But we will be drafting the worst Christmas ever, guys, when it comes to movies and decorations and songs. It's pretty fun. We had a blast doing this one with Jerome. So that's on Friday, but we'll be here tomorrow with the Drop Podcast. So we'll see you then. Enjoy the games tonight, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, a former colleague who also played volleyball, who's the daughter of an NBA player, Morgan Mitchell, Sam Mitchell's daughter, played D1 and coached D1. This is a huge list. We need to make this.
Do you want to make this a short?
Yep. You got to write
it. That'd be cool.
Interesting, video. Yeah. Yeah, with the highlights? Yeah.
Jerome, start pulling volleyball highlights. Brace the day, people.